Krishna, the Buddha, the emptiness of the heart, talks on Zen, given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 2.
Beloved Bhagwan, Daikaku said, Zen practice is not clarifying conceptual distinctions, but throwing away one's preconceived view and notions and the sacred text and all the rest, and piercing through the layers of covering over the spring of self behind them. All the holy ones have turned within and sought in the self, and by this went beyond all doubt. To turn within means all the 24 hours and in every situation to pierce one by one through the layers covering the self, deeper and deeper, to a place which cannot be described. It is when thinking comes to an end and making distinctions ceases, when wrong views and ideas disappear of themselves without having to be driven forth, when, without being sought, the true action and true impulse appear of themselves. It is when one can know what is the truth of the heart. The man resolute in the way must, from the very beginning, never lose sight of it, whether in a place of calm or in a place of strife, and he must not be clinging to quiet places and shunning those where there is disturbance. If he tries to take refuge from trouble by running to some quiet place, he will fall into dark regions. If, when he's trying to throw off delusion and discover truth, everything is a whirl of possibilities, he must cut off the thousand impulses and go straight forward, having no thought at all about good or bad. Not hating the passions, he must simply make his heart pure.
To zoom to safety which no religion is capable of. Zen is a rare flower. All other religions are subservient to the wasted interest, to the past, to the society, to the state. Zen is an exception. My love for it is not without reason. It is the only revolutionary approach to the ultimate reality. And a man like Daikaku is perfectly a representative master. You have to listen to his every word as if you are listening to me.
by a concrete sage, Zen practice is not clarifying conceptual distinctions. The whole theological world and the whole philosophical world are concerned only in clarifying conceptual distinctions. What is what? They never go beyond the conceptual mind. Looking from the point of view of Zen, what they are doing is not only childish, it is also stupid. A child can grow up, but stupidity only becomes thicker and thicker and thicker. All the religions have served the politicians, the emperor, the murderers, the criminals, you may not be aware, but you have to be aware the Pope in the Second World War blessed Mussolini, who was a fascist, to be victorious and prayed for Benito Mussolini to God to make him a victor. Now it is strange, the Archbishop of England was also praying to the same God, both are Christians. But Italy and England was at war. Even Adolf Hitler was blessed to receive the prayers from both the religions, Catholic and Protestant. Their high priestesses prayed to God that he should be made a victor. Now, God must have been in a trouble to decide. All the sides are praying to the same God, the same Christian God. They all worship the same Christian Bible. But in a strange situation, it shows completely that your religion is nothing but a servant to the state. Even it can pray for Adolf Hitler to become the victor of the world. It does not matter for whom the religion is praying. It has been always favorable to those who have power and riches. Jain is in every way exceptional. Japan was also in war, but not a single Zen master blessed the Emperor of Japan to be the conqueror. The Emperor of Japan has gone to receive the blessings from his Zen master, and how to ask him first. He has tried that the master should come to the court. The master refused. He said, even God calls me to his court, I will refuse. I am perfectly happy where I am. If you want to see me, then you have to come. The thirsty has to come to the well. The clear-cut answer the emperor finally had to concede reluctantly, but he went with all his gold following him, not finding a word what to say. He asked, I have always wondered what is hell and what is heaven. The master said, you idiot, I don't think any emperor has received such welcome. A poor monk who has no possessions, nothing, except himself, but having himself gives him such authority, he can say to the emperor, you are an idiot. The emperor became furious. This was too much. He pulled out his sword and was going to cut the head of the master. The master said, wait a little. This is the door of hell. The emperor thought for a moment. He has been answered. Anger, violence, destructiveness. He pulled back his throne and the master said, this is the door of heaven. Do you want to ask any more questions? The emperor said, I am satisfied. He could not manage to ask that bless me, that I should be the victor in the great world war. Just being in his presence, the very idea looked stupid. Zen has never been in any way what Karl Marx says the opium of the people. It is unfortunate that a genius like Karl Marx had no idea of Zen. He knew in the name of religion only Christianity. which is the worst religion in the world. He had not known the flight of Gautama Buddha, of Mahakashyapa, of Nansen, of Tozan. He was absolutely unaware of the East. And religion is an Eastern contribution to the world. And in the far East in Japan, it has come to flower in its totality. Daikaku is one of those masters who have come to their fullness, to their fulfillment. Just listen what he says. Zen practice is not clarifying conceptual distinctions, but throwing away one's preconceived views and notions and the sacred text and all the rest, and piercing through the layers of coverings over the spring of self behind them. Daikaku has the fame of burning all his scriptures that belong to the monastery in which he has become the head, a successor. He burnt all the scriptures and he stopped 1,000 disciples in the monastery, that this is not a university. You are not here to study something. You are here to transform yourself, to speak yourself, and that is not possible through scripture. Through all these scriptures, holy and unholy, both together. It was very shocking when Daikaku did it. It shocked almost the whole Buddhist world. But Daikaku was a man of the same strength and the same power as Bodhidharma or Mahakashyapa. He did not care what the world says. He knows what he is doing. The only way to reach to yourself is to throw away all your preconceived ideas, all your prejudices, all your scriptures, all your religious notions, anything that is concerned with the self and has been conceived through the mind has to be thrown away. Clean it completely. No scripture can give you the experience of your being. They are really the hindrances. Covered under those layers of prejudices and conceptions, is your life history. Unless you throw them away, whether it is Bible or Srimad Bhagavad Gita or Holy Quran or Dhammapada, it does not matter what it is. Whatever is covering your life history, throw it away. Without a single moment of hesitation. Because all that is borrowed is just dust. Layers and layers of dust, and you are covered with that dust. All the holy ones have turned within and sought in the self, and by this went beyond all doubt. He is saying that it is not only me, but all the Buddhas have done the same. They have all burnt the whole content of the mind and cleared the space so that life springs can flow directly and you can for the first time know your own eternity, your own splendor. It is a paradox to say, but it is a fact that all your religious teaching is a barrier for your becoming religious. To know anything about God by others is dangerous. It will prevent you to know the existence directly. And you will settle with cheap knowledge. This whole revolution is don't settle for cheap knowledge. Go for the costly experience, and anything that hinders the way, throw it away. Gautam Buddha has said even that if I come in your meditation, cut my head immediately. Nobody is to be allowed to hinder your progress. These were real lines. Humanity can be proud of these people who were not desiring to enslave you as Catholics, as Hindus, as Mohammedans, whose whole effort was to liberate you from all isms, from all churches, and to help you penetrate your own reality. That is the only truth, the only space which is holy. To turn within means all the 24 hours and in every situation to peer one by one through the layers covering the self deeper and deeper to a place which cannot be described. It is when thinking comes to an end and making distinctions ceases, when wrong views and ideas disappear of themselves without having to be driven forth, then without being sought, the true action and the true impulse appear of themselves. It is when one can know what is the truth of the heart is. In these two statements, he has covered the whole journey from falsehood to truth, from darkness to light, from death to immortality. What he has said can be condensed so that you can remember, not as a knowledge, but only as an indicating finger to the moon. Just few hints for your own inner journey. The first thing is 24 hours. Remember what you find in your meditation. You will forget again and again, but the gaps of forgetfulness will become lesser, and the length of remembering will become longer. By and by, the gaps of forgetting will disappear. And there comes a time when you are a whole circle of remembrance, 24 hours. Even in your sleep, you know you are a Buddha. A small story will explain to you. Ananda, Buddha's very intimate disciple, remained almost 42 years continuously serving Buddha day and night, summer and winter. One night when Buddha was going to lie down, he said that I don't generally ask any questions, because every question that I can ask, others ask, and I am always here, so I answer the listen the answers. And I know any question that I have is going to be asked by somebody or else. In these years, this has become my experience. But there is one question I don't think anybody is going to ask. It is very situational. Buddha said, you can ask. The question, he said, it is not very great, but it has been troubling me for years. Buddha said, you could have asked any time. He said, I never wanted to trouble you. The whole day you are working on people, and in the night only you are alone with me. The question is that I have been watching you for 20 years continuously. Even in night, I get up once or twice to have a look at you, whether you are all right. What has been puzzling me is that you keep the same posture the whole night. You don't change the sides. You don't even remove your legs. Do you sleep or you remain awake? Buddha said, my body sleeps. It sleeps very profoundly. But as far as I am concerned, I am just a pure awareness. So being found the right position once, which is the most comfortable, I have not changed it for 20 years. And I am not going to change it till my last breath. He died in the same posture. Because of Buddha, the posture has become known as the lying posture. For 42 years after his enlightenment, day and night was a continuity of awareness. That's what Daikaku is saying. To turn within means all the 24 hours. Go on turning. Whenever you find a moment to turn, turn. And it is such a simple act to turn within. Nobody's help is needed. No ladder is needed. No door has to be opened. Just close your eyes and look in. Sitting in a bus, traveling in a train, you can do it any time, and slowly, you don't need even to close your eyes. The remembrance simply remains on its own account. That's what Daikaku is saying. It is most beautiful when without being sought, the true action and true impulse appear of themselves. It is when one can know what is the truth of the heart. What is the truth of the heart? The ordinary common sense view of the heart is that it is the source of emotions like love or hate or anger, just as mind is the source of thought, conceptual. Heart is the source of all that is emotional and sentimental. That is the common sense view. But when Buddha says the heart, he means the very center of your being. In his understanding, your love, your hate, everything arises out of your mind. And I think he is absolutely scientific. All psychologists will agree with him. You can experiment yourself. You can see from where your anger arises. It is the mind. From where your innocence arises, it is the mind. Mind is a big phenomenon. It covers conceptual thinking, it covers your emotional patterns, your sentiments. To Buddha, the mind contains all that arises in you. And the heart is that which is always silent and empty and watching. What is the truth of the heart? Silence and watchfulness. The man resolute in the way must from the very beginning never lose sight of it. From the very beginning one should remember that we are in search of a place, of a space where nothing arises, no dust, no smoke, where everything is pure and clean, utterly empty, just spaciousness. One should be clear from the very beginning for what we are looking. Never lose sight of it, without whether in a place of calm or in a place of strife, and he must not be clinging to quiet places and shunning those where there is disturbance. Zen is not against the world. That is one more rebellious attitude against all religions. All religions somehow condemn the world. All religions preach and praise those who have renounced the world, those who have gone renouncing the wife, the children, the home. One has someday to do a deep research that how many million people have left the world in the name of religion and made to suffer small children, old parents, wives, our husbands, disturbing the life of many in the name of religion, and do you think these people have found anything? They have simply created many prostitutes, many orphanages, many old poor people dying without food or medicine. And what they have gained? Not a single one of them has attained to Buddhahood. Zen is very clear and straightforward about everything. It is not a question of renouncing the world. The question is renouncing your mind. Wherever you go, your mind will go with you. Your knowledge will go with you. Your prejudices will go with you. Your scriptures will go with you. Your idea that you are a Hindu or a Mohammedan will go with you. So what you are renouncing? Zen does not want you to renounce the world, but to renounce the mind, so that you can find the empty heart. The empty heart is your purity, your virginity. This empty heart opens the door to the universal and the eternal. Daikaku is saying, people ordinarily do one thing. Wherever there is a strife or some disturbance, they avoid that place. These are the people who have renounced the world, because to be in the world is a difficult task. Every moment there is some difficulty. These are escapists. Once for all, it should be clear that the future of religion cannot depend on the escapists. The authentic religious man will live in the world without being disturbed by all kinds of disturbances. He will be simply a watcher, unperturbed. In fact, the world is a good place because it gives you an opportunity to test your silence, your meditativeness, your watchfulness. Be in the world, but don't be of it. Be in the world, but don't let the world be in you. It is an ordinary mind's approach that where things are quiet, peaceful. It is good there. There you can meditate. So people have gone to the Himalayas to meditate. And what they meditate, you will be surprised, they meditate more of the world that they have left behind. Because everything that they have left behind forcibly follows in their mind. I have heard two stories. One is about an American billionaire. He became tired of money, tired of women, tired of drugs. Finally he thought, I have to go to the Himalayas to find a real master to show me the way to peace. He traveled to the Himalayas, inquired, is somebody aware of an authentic master? People said, yes, there is a man near Mansarovar, the highest lake in the world, on top of Himalayas. He has been there perhaps for 60 years or more, nobody remembers. We have always known him to be there. He is the only man. Even the souls which live in Mansarovar leave it for 3 months and come down to the plains. Because for those months, the lake is completely frozen. You can walk over it. You can drive over it. It is solid rock. But even in those months, that man never leaves the place. Obviously, he must have found the truth. Otherwise, why one should remain there for 60 years in such arduous situations? The billionaire was not to be discouraged. On the contrary, it became a challenge. He was a man who has fought many challenges in his life. He was born a poor man and he became a billionaire. By sheer effort and struggle. So he struggled. It was a difficult task to reach there because no buses go there. No roads go there. One has to find his path by just looking at the map and moving into the unknown. Finally, he found an old man, very old man. He thought in his mind, if there is any God, he must be looking like this man. He was very happy, although tired and fettered. He fell into the feet of the old man. He said, "I am coming from America. I am a super rich man, but I am tired of the world. I have renounced everything." The old man looked at him and he said, "These matters we will discuss later on. Do you have a cigarette on you?" 60 years, and not a single idiot has come here. This is cigarette. The billionaire was very much shocked, but he gave the whole packet and a lighter. And the man said, "You are a very religious person." But the billionaire said, "What I am to do now?" He said, "Go back. And when you come again, bring as many cigarettes as possible." "This is a strange. I have come here for enlightenment." The old man said, "Do what I have told you. Just this way, going back and coming again, going back and coming again, you will become enlightened." Miserably, he went back. One has never heard him coming back again. But this man for 60 years had been waiting for cigarettes. The second story is certainly fiction. This that I have told you may be true. The second is when Edmund Hillary reached on the Everest, he was surprised to see a Hindu sannyasi is squatting on the Everest. He said, "My God, we used to think that nobody has ever reached here. How did you manage?" He said, "I come here every day. This is a sort of toilet for me. I just live nearby. But these things we can discuss later on. How much for your watch?" Because here it is so difficult to know what time it is. These people who have escaped from the world, do you think they are thinking anything else? They are thinking more of the world than you are, because you don't have to think, it is there. these poor fellows have to think thousands of things which are not there. Mind always desires that which is not there. That which is with you, mind simply accepts it. There is no need to think about it. This ordinary conception has prevailed over humanity, that go to a quiet place to meditate and get away from places which are of strife, struggle, conflict. But Zen has a totally different attitude and more psychological. There is no need to leave the world. The world is perfectly good place as a fire test. What is needed, go in, not go somewhere out. And you can go in anywhere in the world, whether it is Himalayas or it is MG Road. You can become enlightened even with a rented bicycle. It does not matter that it was rented. I have heard people even becoming enlightened on stolen bicycles. Because becoming enlightened has nothing to do with bicycles. Dayakaku says, if he tries to take refuge from trouble by running to some quiet place, he will fall into dark regions. No religion has said that. And I authenticate it. The person who escapes from troubles falls certainly into a very dark space, because his very beginning is wrong. He is going away from the trouble. He should have remained in the trouble untroubled. That would have been some gain. But he has escaped from it. And when there is no struggle, no trouble, no strife, sitting somewhere in the Himalayas, the silence that surrounds you is of the Himalayas, not of you. That is not going to help. You have to find your own Himalayas within. If, when he is trying to throw off delusions and discover truth, everything is a realm of possibilities, he must cut off the thousand impulses and go straight forward. Having no thought at all about good or bad, you can see the rebelliousness of Zen. Every religion is concerned you should be good, you should not be bad, you should be respectable. You should not be condemned by the society. You should not lose your repute. Even if you have to be a hypocrite, just be good, even though the good is not arising on its own, you are forcing it. It is the greatness of Zen. Don't have any thought about good or bad. Be absolutely a witness. And while you are just a witness, whatever happens through you is bound to be good. The whole world may condemn it, it does not matter. Only you have to listen to your own heart. If your heart says yes, go on, then go on straightforward. Even if it is against all morality, against all doctrines, against all religions, it does not matter. It should not be against your simple, innocent heart. The only criterion is that it should be spontaneous. Spontaneity is good. Non-spontaneity is hypocrisy. Not hitting the passions, he must simply make his heart pure. On every point, Zen differs from all other religions. And on every point, Zen is right. It does not say to you, fight with your passions, drop your passions. Unless you drop all your desires, passions, longings, you cannot attain to the truth. But the reality is just vice versa. If you get into this struggle of dropping passions, you will never win. Don't be bothered by the passions. by the desire, find out the empty heart and its purity, and you will find all passions, all desires are transformed. People always begin from the wrong end. And there is a reason why they begin with the wrong end. The wrong end seems to be rational. For example, they see in Gautam Buddha great compassion. This compassion is arising spontaneously. But they don't know the empty heart of the Buddha from where this compassion is arising. They can see his compassionate actions and logically they derive the conclusion that if you do compassionate actions, you will become a Buddha. The law, the Dhamma does not work this way. You cannot in the first place drop the passions. You can fight, you can wrestle, and you can suffer, and you can torture yourself. You can repress, you can become a pervert, as all the monks of all the religions have become perverts, psychologically sick, because they have been fighting against nature and nobody can win against nature. But they are doing something rational. It seems to them that being compassionate and their compassion will be bogus, false. You know, when your smile is just on the lips, lipstick smile, it has no roots anywhere inside. It is just there on the lips. I have heard about a politician in America. In America, politicians in election go from house to house. Kissing a small baby, in a small park, there were at least 24 babies with one woman. The politician thought, my God. And all those babies were dirty, smelly. Their noses flowing, and he had to kiss all of them. Just to convince the woman that I am the right candidate. And then he told the woman that, remember, this is my name and I am standing for the president. He said, I will remember. You are so kind. Then he asked the woman, just one question arises. are all these children yours? He said, no, not a single one. Politician said, not a single one. What you are doing here? He said, I am just keeping an eye on them. Their mothers have gone into a conference. He said, fuck you, you. Why did not you tell me before? I had to kiss all these red, all seem to be Italian, full of spaghetti, and you did not stop me. All that kissing was just political, diplomatic. Unless your life arises from your spontaneity, from your very empty heart, it is going to be just superficial. And with the superficial you cannot be blissful. With the superficial you are going to remain miserable. Only with the truth is the beginning of a different kind of life, of joy, of bliss, of dance. When your whole being is full of sound, then all your actions are poetic. Then your very presence has a grace a beauty which is not of the body. It is radiating from the body, but it is coming from the deep sources of your own empty heart. Upon his enlightenment, a Zen monk wrote, you, before me standing, are my eternal self. Since my first glimpse, you have been my secret love. At the moment of death, you cannot think. That what movie is running in a certain theater, when death is standing before you, you cannot think of anything else. The Zen monk is saying in this small haiku, you, before me standing, are my eternal self. In the mirror of death, he has seen his original face, all things are dropped, all concerns are dropped, all preoccupations are dropped. Since my first glimpse, you have been my secret love. You are all in search of a secret love. And you are all trying to find it in somebody. Hence the frustration. All lovers, except those who are never allowed to meet. Only those who are never allowed to meet are remembered for centuries for their great love. In the East we know Shiri and Faryad, Lala and Majnu, because they were never allowed to meet by their parents and society. They have become symbolic of great lovers. But it is strange, they were never allowed even to meet with each other, and they have become the symbols of great love. And what happened to millions of lovers who have been allowed? Not a single one of them has proved a great lover. All are simply lousy. And every love affair is a failure, without exception. You may accept it, you may not. One tries to hide the fact as long as possible. But everybody knows that what everybody is doing. The reason is that your frustration is bound to happen. Your real love is for the eternal self hidden behind the curtain, and you never look behind the curtain. You are just playing on the stage and befooling. Everybody's great love is to know the secret of the eternal and immortal life. Because you cannot find it in another person, when you meet on the sea beach, it seems that to everyone it is the same story, that this woman or this man is made for me. And nobody is made for anybody. Everybody is made for himself. You are not some kind of manufactured parts that you are made to fit with each other. So when you don't fit, then the tragedy begins. Before that, all is goody-goody. The real test is after honeymoon. After honeymoon, the lovers are finished. They don't look at each other eye to eye. The husband goes on reading the same newspaper to avoid the wife. A man in the pub was talking to his friend, said, "Why you remain always silent? You don't say anything." He said, "The whole credit goes to my wife. She says and I listen. She does not like any interruption. So after years of listening and without interrupting, it has become a habit. Wherever I am, even though my wife is not there, I sit silently." The failure of love in the world shows a significant fact that perhaps our love is searching for something else, and because we don't find it in our so-called lovers, the frustration arises. Nobody is responsible, just our direction is wrong. The real lover is within you. The eternal lover is within you. Once you have found it, you are absolutely content with yourself. There is no need for anyone, because you are no more incomplete. Only a Buddha is fulfilled. Manisha has asked, "Beloved Bhagwan, what is the wisdom of the heart? The common sense carries many fragments of truth, but they are never complete. Around the world, everywhere it is heard, the wisdom of the heart. But the truth is, the wisdom arises not out of the heart, it arises out of the emptiness of the heart. But that is known only to those who have reached deepest into their self. But common sense carries fragments of knowledge. They know that the people who are compassionate, people of heart, have a certain wisdom which is not knowledge. A certain insight, a certain intuitiveness which cannot be taught. They can see things, feel things, they are sensitive to things which are not available to the mind. So people start thinking that there are possibilities of the heart having wisdom. But they don't know that the heart is your emptiness. And out of your emptiness, a clarity, a transparency arises, which can see things which you cannot intellectually infer. This is wisdom. To make it complete, Manisha, it has to be said, wisdom of the empty heart. The heart as the physiologist knows it is just a blood pumping system. Out of your heart beats, no wisdom can arise. Have you ever felt any wisdom arising from your heartbeat? Has any doctor ever heard while checking your heartbeat through his stethoscope some wisdom? This heart is not meant. When we are talking about the emptiness of the heart, we are talking about actually throwing away all the content of the mind. Then the mind itself becomes your heart. It is not a physiological concept. It is your no mind, no prejudice, no knowledge, no content, just purity, simple silence, and the no mind can be called the empty heart. It is only a question of expression. What you want to choose, you can choose. The wisdom of the empty heart or the wisdom of no mind. They are equivalent. When you are in deep meditation, you feel a great serenity, a joy that is unknown to you, a watchfulness that is a new gift, and soon this watchfulness will become the host. The day the watchfulness becomes the host, it remains 24 hours with you, and out of this watchfulness, whatever you do has a wisdom in it. Whatever you do shows a clarity, a purity, a spontaneity, a grace. A Mullah Nasruddin story. He was born in Iran, and in Iran there is still his grave. A strange grave. A unique in the whole world. There are millions of graves, but nothing like Mullah Nasruddin's grave. On the grave there is standing a door closed with a big lock, and the lock Mullah Nasruddin, before dying, made all the arrangements that you put the key with me inside the grave so nobody can open the door. Even the emperor came to see that what nonsense is happening, and this man is thought to be a wise man. Of course, a little eccentric, but loved by everybody. The emperor inquired Nasruddin's disciples, what is the matter? He said, it is not new. He used to carry this door wherever he go. And he asked him, what is the matter? He said, if I take the door with me, nobody can enter into my house. Obviously, everybody enters into the house from the door. So just to protect the house, I carry the door with me. And before dying, he said that fix the door on my grave, lock it, and put the key with me. Any time I may like, I can open the door. Just have a fresh air. The emperor says, all nonsense. But the emperor also liked the man. the chief disciple said that there is something in it, he's saying that don't think that my death is my death. You are putting my body in the grave, but I am still alive. My life is eternal. But he was crazy always. To make this statement that life is eternal, he has put this door that any moment, if I want to come out, at least I have the key and I don't have to ask anybody's permission. I can open the door, have a little walk, or enjoy around the city. You will not see me, but I will see you. Mulla Nasruddin was sent by the Emperor of Iran with great gifts to the Emperor of India. And he praised the Emperor of India as the full moon. The rumor reached Iran. There were enemies of Nasruddin, and they said, you have not chosen the right person to take the message. He has praised the Emperor of India as the full moon. The Emperor said, let him come back. He will have to answer, otherwise he will lose his head. Nasruddin came back. The Indian Emperor was very impressed by it, gave him many presents. The Emperor of Iran was very angry and he said, Nasruddin, your life is at risk. Nasruddin said, everybody's life is always at risk. Do you think your life is not at risk? He said, don't discuss philosophy. You have to answer. You told the Indian Emperor the full moon. It is insulting to me. Nasruddin said, you are an idiot. You don't understand the meaning. You are the rising moon. The first day moon, which is just a small arc, remains for a few moments and disappears. The full moon means the days of decline have come. That Indian Emperor was an idiot. He thought, I am praising, I was simply declaring that your time has come. Now there is no more growth, only decline. And you are an idiot being angry. You are the rising moon. You have to expand, conquer. You have enough time to become a full moon. The emperor was very much impressed by the interpretation. The enemies were simply shocked. They had never thought that he will give this interpretation. Nobody ever thought about it. Everybody thought that this is insulting. Nasruddin is a Sufi mystic. A little crazy, but always tremendously wise. One day he is going to take his disciples to some rare collection of paintings that has come to the city. Now the question was, he will be riding on his donkey. He asked his disciples what to do. If I ride on my donkey the usual way, then my back will be towards you. That is insulting. And I cannot insult my disciples. If you walk ahead of me, your back will be towards me. And I don't think you will do that insult to me. So the only possible way is I will ride on the donkey facing you. The disciples said, but the whole town will laugh. And you will make us also look stupid. Although there is a point in it, but to go anywhere with you is a trouble. And the procession went through the town. Everybody looked, what is the matter? Nobody has ever seen anybody riding on the donkey face backwards. Finally a crowd gathered and they asked, we will not let you go unless we get the explanation. Nasruddin said, the explanation is simple. I don't want to insult my disciples, so I cannot have my back towards them. And I don't want to be insulted by my disciples, so they cannot walk ahead of me. They have to walk behind me. Now what do you say? How it can be managed? This is the only way. People said, although it is crazy, but it is the only way. If keeping somebody at the back is insulting, then certainly you are doing the right thing. In his life, a simple man with utter purity every S is full of wisdom, but on the surface looks a little crazy. He belongs to the same category as Bodhidharma, as Mahakashyapa, but he is a little more eccentric than any of them. From the emptiness of the heart, it is not necessary that what will arise will be understood by the people as wisdom. You will be perfectly at ease with it. And those who understand you, they will be perfectly at ease with you. But in this world, to find people who can understand the wisdom of the empty heart is very difficult and rare. But there is no problem. The man of empty heart does not need any recognition. He is so fulfilled that he may look mad to the whole world, but if it is arising out of his spontaneity, it does not matter. All that matters is that it should not be fake, that it should not be a hypocrisy, that it should not be phony. It should be coming out of your heart and its emptiness. Then everything is wise. Whether people recognize it or not. Who has recognized Mullah Nasruddin? Very few people. Who has recognized Bodhidharma? Very few people. Who has recognized Mahakashyapa suddenly laughing? Only Gautam Buddha. 10,000 monks were present, but nobody could understand this eccentric behavior. But it was arising out of the empty heart, from a clarity of vision. Only another man of the same clarity can understand it. Manisha, the wisdom of the empty heart, is understandable only to those who have entered into their own emptiness. To others, it will remain a puzzle, a craziness, a madness. And there are so many beautiful Buddhas that their behavior was absolutely in tune with the emptiness of the heart, but it was not rational, it could not be understood by the so-called intellectual. It was almost impossible to be understood by the crowds. In Japan there is a doll. It is available anywhere here too. The doll is called Daruma. Daruma is Japanese nickname for Bodhidharma. And the doll represents something special . It was made, so goes the story, by Bodhidharma. The doll is made in such a way that its bottom is very heavy. So you can throw it anyway, it will always fall and sit up immediately in the lotus posture. When Bodhidharma made it, his disciples laughed at what you are doing. He said, this will be a teaching even to small children, that in every position, in every situation, be a Buddha. Look at this doll. Throw it anyway, it will immediately regain its balance and sit in the Buddha posture. A Buddha of the category of Bodhidharma can make a doll far more important than any scripture. The tea you drink, perhaps you don't know the whole story about it. Bodhidharma was meditating on a mountain in China called Ta. And he did not want to blink his eyes. But it is natural for eyes to blink. He wanted to keep his eyes open while he is meditating. So he threw all the eyelids, he cut and threw them just before his temple. From the hairs of the eyelids, the first tea leaves grew. That is the story. Because they were first found on the mountain Ta, that's why it is called tea. And all the names in different languages refer to the mountain Ta. In Marathi it is Cha. In Hindi it is Char. But it comes and originates from the mountain Char. Of course it is a fiction. But because it grew out of the hairs of Bodhidharma, it keeps you away. When you want to be awake, just a cup of tea. But remember, it keeps you awake because it is an out-product of Bodhidharma's eyelids. And Bodhidharma was a man of absolute awareness. So some quality of awareness is still continued in tea. It is a beautiful story. But its implications are great. Anything that comes out of the empty heart and its wisdom is going to carry some quality for coming centuries. It may look a fiction, it is a fiction, but even a fiction can be used to indicate a truth. Tea keeps you awake because Bodhidharma was a man of full awakened consciousness. Even if you watch Buddha's statue silently, you will be surprised that slowly your mind becomes empty and you start entering into your own spring of life. That statue is made exactly in the posture Gautam Buddha used to meditate. Sitting in front of that statue, something in you starts synchronizing with the posture of the statue. Doing nothing, just sitting, and the Buddha starts reflecting in your mirror. But the mirror has to be clean, the mirror has to be empty of content. That's what we are trying every day, washing the mirrors, cleaning the dust of the centuries. Every day, something of the impurity drops away. something becomes more recognizable as a Buddha. Maybe just a glimpse. But soon this glimpse will become your whole life. Before you all become Buddhas, few laughters, because after becoming a Buddha, laughter does not suit. No Buddha laughs. It is always good to laugh before you become a Buddha. Because if you laugh when you are a Buddha, it will be objective. Good old Olga Kovalevsky comes stomping down the stairs to find her husband on the couch watching football on television. Kovalevsky, she nags, "How come we never talk anymore? Other husbands talk to their wives. You have not said two words to me all week." Then Olga furiously steps in front of the TV and demands, "Just say two words." "Okay," says Kovalevsky, stretching his neck around to see the TV. "Shut up." Miss Goodbody is teaching sex education to her 9th class. Sitting in the back of the room, reading Playboy and smoking a cigarette, is Chester Cheese Kid, Wise Guy Billy. "Class," begins Miss Goodbody shakily, "today we will discuss sexual intercourse." Wise Guy Billy puts down his medicine, smiles and winks at Miss Goodbody. "Ah, there are 8 basic positions for sexual intercourse," Miss Goodbody says nervously. "9, comes Billy's voice from the back. Flustered and blushing, Miss Goodbody begins again, "There are 8 basic positions for sexual intercourse." She stammers, "9, interrupts Billy again. This time Miss Goodbody takes a deep breath and continues, "The first is called the missionary position. The man is on top of the woman and is facing her." "Aha," says Billy, winking again. 10. Freddy and Kovalevsky are in town for a drinking spree. After a lot of drinking, they decide to go to the 100-story high, revolving, roasting rhinoceros restaurant for some dinner. They choose a table overlooking the city lights, but have only been sitting there for a few minutes when both of them feel like the need to pee. can you tell us where the bathroom is? Paddy is lovers at the head waiter. Certainly, sir, replied the waiter, pointing across the restaurant. Just go down the passage over there, turn left, and go down 2 steps down. The directions are repeated again for Kovalevsky, who is not quite sure he knows where he is or what he is looking for. Just remember, says the head waiter, turn left and 2 steps down. So Paddy and Kovalevsky set off across the room and down the passage. They take the first door on the right and step inside into the open elevator shaft. 100 stories below, Paddy slowly picks himself up off the ground. How do you feel? Paddy asks his Polish friend laying beside him. Not too bad, replies Kovalevsky, but I don't think I can manage the second step. Close your eyes. Feel your body to be completely frozen. Look inward. As deep as possible. It is your own space. At the very end, you will find the empty heart. The empty heart is a door to eternity. It is a connection between you and existence. It is not something physical or material. It is not something mental or psychological. It is something beyond both transcending both. It is your spirituality. Remember the empty heart makes you a Buddha. This moment is blessed ten thousand hearts are feeling the silence and the merger with existence. You are the fortunate ones of the earth. To make it clear, Nivedana, relax. Just be a watcher of mind and body both. The insistence should be on the witnessing. Witnessing is your secret love. Witnessing is Buddha watching. Catch hold of the experience so that when you come back, you bring something out of your depth, some gold, some diamond. Some its splendor. Mm. Nivedana. Come back. But come back with a new richness, with a new integrity, with a new individuality, reborn. Sit down for few moments, recollecting the experience that you are the Buddha.
Yes, Bhagwan.
Can he celebrate the gathering of 10,000 Buddhas?
Yes, Bhagwan.